Well, as I was looking at our text this morning, the story of Joseph is an interesting one, but because so much of it's missing in the lectionary, I thought we wouldn't necessarily go there. And what got my attention more than anything else was our New Testament lessons. And in Romans, we have Paul talking about how Gentiles who were once in rebellion against God, God has provided mercy for them. And we sometimes get this idea, and it's a half-truth, and that, the problem with all half-truths is that they're half-true. It's the other half that gets in the way. And we sometimes think that Paul was sent to the Gentiles, and that's when all that began. And before that, God really didn't have a lot of interest in Gentiles, and God was just interested in the Jews. Well, when we look at our Old Testament lesson just briefly, we see that Joseph was sent into Egypt, had a lot of unpleasant experiences, of course, being accused of all kinds of things, but eventually rising to be the second most important person in all of Egypt, and from that position was able to create a plan for the famine that was coming that saved thousands and thousands of lives, Jewish lives to be sure, but every life that was in Egypt, everyone who paid attention, everyone who obeyed the rules that Joseph laid down, was saved from a famine that otherwise was obviously lethal. I can't imagine 7 years of no plowing or anything. That would be an enormous problem for us. And imagining that in a pre-industrial country, oh my goodness. So Joseph was there to save not just his family that eventually became the entire nation of Israel, but instead was there to save everyone. And that's where the sermon title comes from, Who's In and Who's Out. And we've talked about this before, and there's just something about human beings that likes to know who's in and who's out. And it doesn't have to be a bad thing. Sometimes it is. You know, sometimes we use the in crowd bullies those on the outside and all that. And that's another issue, I think. But it's useful for us to know who's in and who's out. It's useful for us to know who's part of our community, who has the shared understanding, so we don't have to explain all of our terms when we talk to people, if nothing else. The people who are in our family, we don't have to remind them that we do actually care about them. Well, at least I hope we don't. You know, it's just so when we make, you know, when we're making fun of each other, maybe you don't, but when my brothers and I are together, we most certainly do. We don't have to preface everything we say by, don't forget, we are related, this is just a joke, because we're in. And so in and out is a useful kind of thing, or at least it can be. But when we get into the New Testament, we start encountering some of the problems of the in and out that are also in the Old Testament, but particularly in the New Testament. And what is one of the most interesting stories in the Gospels is the one that was read for us this morning. And it begins, in some ways, you sort of wonder, how are these two things connected? But they really are. I sometimes wonder what the people who put together the lectionary are doing, like leaving out some of the parts of Joseph's story that I probably would have included. But this one is very well done. Because what we have is Jesus is preaching to the crowd and says, in this translation, listen and try to understand. It's not what goes into your mouth that defiles you. You're defiled by the words that come out of your mouth. Now, if we think that Jesus was also sent just to the Jews, and then Paul picked up things later, this is a very important thing here, because this whole idea of being defiled, of being profaned, going back to the Levitical laws, the Old Testament laws, lots and lots and lots of them, as you may recall, had to do with what you're eating and how you ate and whether you washed your hands first and all those other things that went into all of that. And Jesus is here drawing a revolutionary conclusion out of this, saying that it's not what you eat that causes the problem. It's what you say. What goes into your mouth is irrelevant. But what comes out, now that's a problem. And some of the disciples come to him afterwards and said, do you realize you offended the Pharisees by what you've just said? And Jesus more or less says, well, I don't care. That's not an issue particularly for him. And so then Peter says, well, explain to us the parable that says people aren't defiled by what they eat. For us, this is perfectly straightforward. But the fact that Peter asks for an explanation gives you some idea, or gives us some idea, of how revolutionary this was, that this plain statement needed to be explained. And Jesus says, well, whatever you eat, it just goes through you. You get whatever value from it, and then away it goes. It's what comes out of your heart that defiles you. Evil thoughts, murder, and all of those other things. These are what defile you. Eating with unwashed hands will never defile you. This is a huge thing in that context, to say that something you've been taught your entire life isn't really the case. And then we go into this story of this Gentile woman, a Canaanite. And it isn't, for the most part, I think the headings that various translations put in are quite useful. But sometimes what they do is they create an unnatural break. Now, there is a break between what Jesus has just said, because it said, then Jesus left Galilee and went north to the region of Tyre and Sidon. But then it goes directly into the story of this Gentile woman. Now, the people who put together the Gospels, Matthew and the rest, didn't put things together just at random. There's a reason why things are there, and there's a reason why this story is right after Jesus' teaching on how unwashed hands, and by extension, a lot of the things you've been taught, will not defile you. Because it goes into this, you have a Gentile woman pleading, have mercy on me, O Lord, Son of David. Her daughter is possessed by a demon that torments her severely. And Jesus doesn't give her any reply. Now, we think this is rude. Well, it is rude. But sometimes we are rude for a larger purpose. For example, someone I can see thinking that I am being rude when I don't respond to my grandson. Well, when I've said something to my grandson and his response is, huh? What it means is that he is just making a noise. And so if I just look at him, he usually goes, oh, okay. And he knows what I said. And I'm trying to get him out of this huh thing, because it's not going to do him any favors when he goes back to school. And so if I just look at him and don't respond, he either says, pardon, I didn't hear you. Or he did hear me and just said, huh, out of habit. And then he responds to what I actually said. Is it rude? Well, yes, it is rude, but it's rude in service of something larger. And in this case, it's the same with Jesus. Jesus doesn't reply. And then his disciples urged him to send her away, proving once again that the disciples still don't really get it. She's bothering us. The disciples will at some point learn that being bothered is part of what you signed up for, whether you knew it or not. But at this point, they still didn't. And so Jesus, at the behest of his disciples, says to the woman, I was sent only to help God's lost sheep, the people of Israel. We think, okay, we were right. Jesus was only sent to them. But then she comes pleading again, says, help me. Jesus says, it isn't right to take food from the children and throw it to the dogs. Another bit of rudeness, I think, equating this woman to a dog. Once again, Jesus is making these statements not so much to her, although they are to her, but in service of this larger picture to his disciples who think that way, who think that there are Jews and then there's everybody else, and everybody else may as well be a dog. And so Jesus is allowing them in for a bit. And so then the woman says, true, but even dogs get to eat the scraps. And Jesus says, your faith is great, your request is granted. So, and her daughter was instantly healed. And we think, hooray, It's all a nice little story, and it is, but it is so much more. Because what Jesus is doing by, first of all, interacting with this woman the way his disciples would expect him to, sets them up for this great reversal. Because I'm guessing, and it's always tricky to guess what other people are thinking, but I think it's a reasonable assumption to think that the disciples figured that at the end of this little interaction where Jesus says, you know, it's not right to take the food from your kids and give it to the dogs. And even when the woman says, well, even the dogs get to eat the scraps, the disciples are probably thinking, okay, well, now Jesus is just going to tell her to get lost. And Jesus said, oh, no. Your faith is great. Your daughter is healed. Because for Jesus, who's in and who's out is a meaningless question. Because from Jesus' perspective, everyone's in and no one's out. That when it comes to Jesus' interest in human beings, nobody is left out. And this was an enormous message for his initial followers, all of whom were Jews, who had a very strong in and out. Herman Woke, the novelist, has got a great novel, if you're ever looking for something to read, called Inside Outside. And it's about this whole thing. The protagonist is a Jewish man, and it's a novel that sort of is linear in one way, but has flashbacks to his memories as they relate to what he's going through. And it's all about inside and outside, inside the Jewish culture of the time. It's a modern novel set in, he's an advisor to President Nixon. So it's within that time frame. And so he's talking about being inside the Jewish community, the Jewish culture, the Jewish customs, and then outside and how you function. Well, Jesus is saying that when it comes to who Jesus is interested in, everybody's in. That there is no in and out in the sense that God only cares about one group of people or one kind of person. And it's a message that for us, we sort of don't think we need it, but we sort of do. Or at least we could. It's easy enough for us to think in terms of in and out when it comes to the people that we connect with. People who aren't quite like us, they're out. Well, they're not like us, that's true, and that's one in and out. But when it comes to our responsibility to be Jesus for these people, to demonstrate the reality of our relationship with God through that same Jesus, empowered by the Holy Spirit, everybody's eligible for that. Spending a lot of time thinking who's in and out, I suggest, is not terribly helpful. When we think of what our responsibility is as followers of Jesus, we don't care who's in or out because there is no in or out. If Jesus is willing to reach out to everyone, and we see that in Jesus' ministry, in the Old Testament, if God was willing to care for more than just that family and then the nation of Israel. And then we have Paul talking specifically that he has been sent to Gentiles and all the rest. Then it really is a bit much if we decide we can decide who's in and who's out. So it's a trick question, who's in and who's out, because everybody's in. No one's out. No one is beyond Jesus, and no one is beyond our reach if they've been put there for us to interact with. So I don't anticipate this is a huge message to anyone here I guess I have to talk to that person. It's a reminder for us that it's easy for us to fall into the in and out, or to think that that's somebody else's responsibility, or that, no, they'd never listen, or anything like that. If Jesus can respond to anyone, so can we. And we've been told that's part of our responsibility, is to make use of our gifts and our experience and who we are as we relate to whoever's around us, whether we think they're in or out. Assuming we even bother asking the question, they're always in. Amen.